Progressive Rugby League.
G'day, Jono Duncan. You've probably noticed by now that we like to return to the topic of French rugby league every couple of months or so on this podcast. Why is that, I hear you ask? Well, for us, look, if this show had a postcode, it would probably be somewhere in the southwest of France, so it's kind of like going home. And I know what you're thinking, how the hell can you call the southwest of France home when you've spent all of 4 days there? Well, to that, I'd firstly say, it was 5 days, thank you very much. But I'd also say, I don't know, there's just an undeniable appeal for us. The history, the bald-faced injustice, the resilience, the passion, the underdog spirit, the unique rugby league philosophy. From afar, you can have this romantic notion of French rugby league, but when you get there, you realise it's really not romantic at all. Actually, it's more substantial than that. After all, romance comes and goes. So no, it's not romantic, but it's real. And yeah, it's fairly small, but it's real. And there's a pride that flows from that. Those in France who love rugby league live rugby league, and because of that, you know they're not going to give up easily. You know they'll keep pushing. Today we're thrilled to be joined by a very proud French rugby league man who's doing his share of pushing. Sylvain Houllet is not only a top quality coach and former French international who plied his trade on both sides of the channel, he's a man that clearly prioritises rugby league philosophy. What else could explain the spectacularly entertaining and effective style of rugby league football that his team, the great Toulouse Olympique, play? So with Toulouse Olympique waiting out an unwelcome hiatus in their rugby league trajectory, we thought now would be the perfect time to pick the brain of one of French rugby league's finest. Yes, we'll chat about how Toulouse Olympique intends to come back from the season that never was, but we'll also take time to reflect on Sylvain's life in French rugby league, rising through the ranks, cracking Super League, representing the national team, and the best French players Sylvain Houllet has seen in his lifetime. Yes, Sylvain will be kindly sharing his best French 13 of the last 39 years. An enticing prospect, so let's delay no longer. Let's introduce the man himself, Sylvain Houllet. Welcome back to the Progressive Rugby League podcast.
Thank you, and bonjour everyone.
It's great to have you back, mate. Very much looking forward to hearing your best French 13 from your lifetime later on. But before we get started, give us an update on the farm in Chumigus. How has the summer been? Are we getting close to lambing season?
Yeah, we do actually. You have to be spot on. We're 1 month away from lambing. So yeah, they're getting big now. But no, the farm has been good. Obviously, with the circumstances that we had, it's been a while that I haven't walking around that much on the farm for the last 6 months, you know. Like, so my brother was happy, you know. Yeah. I gave him a good hand.
You could help him out, yeah. I should say, for those who don't know, although we have subtly mentioned it about 5,000 times since, that we visited Sylvain's farm last year, and, you know, without going too far over the top, it was the best day of our lives. Now, Sylvain, obviously the championship season got called off a couple of months ago. It was up in the air for a while, but eventually 2020 was cancelled, which was such a shame. And Toulouse Olympique had started very well, 5 from 5, playing in a beautiful new stadium, one of the favourites for promotion. What was your reaction when the news was confirmed, and how did it make you feel?
Yeah, you know, it was very, very disappointing when we heard the news, but I have to be fair to you, you know, like, the more we were waiting for the decision, the more I think it was the right decision. When you look at players' perspectives, having a lockdown of 3.5 months, it would have been really, really hard to prepare them, you know, like in 4 weeks. I think it would have put the players like in big danger. It would have, you know, like I often said that, you know, that maybe it would have been a slaughterhouse, and I don't think it would have been fair on the players. You probably can see that, you know, with the NRL. Looking at the Super League out there under it too, you know, you can see that every week there's cases of the COVID. And so obviously for us, you know, when you're looking at it like from the first day of preseason, it is really disappointing. You know, we thought and we built a really, really strong squad, you know, probably like the best squad that I ever had. And, you know, when we sat down and we wanted to change a little bit our way of attacking again, you know, like, so we put a lot of work into it. And having, obviously, like you say, the new ground, and I mean, it was magical to play on that ground. You know, like, we played 3 times so far. It was, you know, we were going to have, like, our changing room because it's still on the process of building them, so we didn't use them yet, you know. Right. So, yeah, things like that, you know, where, you know, you've got that feeling of, like, an unfinished business. But, you know, we couldn't control it. It happens. It's obviously, like, some circumstances.
Yeah. So how do you approach the 2021 season from a club perspective? Are you continuing to get together regularly with the squad, or are you just treating it like a long off season and you'll see them again in the preseason?
Yeah, you know, at the beginning we had them, you know, like mainly like Adam Innes, our fitness coach, give them program. But since then, it's been calling off. Still, they give them program, do their program. I spoke to all the players that you see to talk about what's happened next season, you know. But then we treat it like a little bit of a long off season, you know. We're going to start earlier, you know, like, so we're still waiting for the RFL to give us the date of when 2021 is going to start, you know, to plan everything. But, like, if it doesn't change, if it's the first weekend of February, we kind of plan that to get back, you know, in preseason a month earlier, just to give us a little bit, like, obviously, like, we know that some players have been very professional and worked and still training, but we know also that Saul hasn't done much, so it's going to take a few weeks to bring them back, you know, up to the level. But also, like, I really want to plan, you know, January for a lot more friendlies, you know, because it would have been like 10 months we haven't played a game of rugby, you know, so I think that's a big key for us to, like, this year play a little bit more friendlies than usually to prepare well for 2021, you know.
Yeah, and Sylvain, I know you're a keen student of the game, and you would have been watching a lot of the NRL and Super League this year. I'm curious, in a coach's perspective, on the six again rule, because this rule was really a last-minute introduction into the second post-COVID part of the season. So teams didn't really have much time to prepare. So firstly, what do you think of the rule? And secondly, how do you think teams might change their preseason training for the rule once they have a whole preseason to prepare for it? Will there be changes to the way teams prepare physically and tactically, do you think?
Yeah, I do believe it. It's pretty good, you know, I don't mind it, I have to say. And you can see how I believe that, you know, NRL teams are really adapt to the way of not giving penalty, because obviously it costs so much, you know. Like, so for us, what we spoke about is like mainly defensively. You've got less three-man tackle now, and so you need to be really strong. And I think, you know, we believe that two-man tackle will be like a big key. And so for that, we're going to have to be like really efficient, you know, within our two-man tackle. So that's something, obviously, defensively, was going to be very, very important. Your first defenders on the line, your eight defenders, going to be key to where, with your markers, where they're going to need to know when they can be like aggressive, or like when they're going to have to readjust with their spacing. So that's going to be like a big key. And obviously, after offensively, for me, the main thing is the role of the hooker position is like now huge. Having the hookers who can create, who can, you know, like give a certainty, you know, around the ruck is going to be so important. I mean, you watch Penrith at the moment, they're the best at, you know, hookers who can run fast on his feet. Going to be like a big key. And also like the back position, when, yeah, recognizing when big forwards are tired, you know, then they're getting a little bit lazy, and getting their feet wrong, their spacing wrong, and they can take them on. So I think it's interesting. And on the fitness part, I think, you know, it's like it will demand a lot more, too, you know, like especially around in the middle. Them forwards going to have to be like repeat efforts after efforts. And I have to say, in the English competition, there's a lot of teams who play that, you know, they're playing completion games, so no mistakes, playing around the ruck. So I think it's going to suit the British game a lot, as mainly championship team. So we're going to have to be really strong around the ruck.
Yeah, that's very interesting. The English game, they're really concentrating on completions. Now, speaking of the English game, what do you think about the lack of scrums in Super League so far? Do you like that, or would you prefer to see scrums return in 2021?
Yeah, I know that that's scrum. The best in terms of like proper scrum and pushing and things like that, you know. But it's still like, for me, it's a 6 against 6 with a lot of space, you know, like give you a little bit of attacking purpose, you know. So, and I really like what the NRL done. Like, you can decide where you want to play the scrum. I prefer that than scrum, you know, like it's part of our game. And again, as I say, it's like where is a unique situation where you can attack. You can see some skills, some tactical play, you know. It's still a back the tactic. You can put forwards in your attack, you can put a second row, and even like in the defensive scrum, you think about that, like how you can, in terms of the position after, to bring your line back together, you know. So it's still like a technical and tactical things, you know, for me. And I think, you know, I'm not a big fan of scrapping the scrum.
Yes, well, I'm with you on that one. Yeah, it gives a little bit of a few options for creativity, which Toulouse Olympique is so good at. Now, Sylvain, many listeners know you as the coach of the great Toulouse Olympique Club, but of course you had a fantastic playing career too. You excelled in the top tier of the French Rugby League, you cracked Super League, which is a great achievement, and spent many years in the UK, and also represented France on a number of occasions. But before we get onto that, can you take us back to where you grew up and how rugby league became part of your life as a kid?
Yeah, for me, it's where my farm is. It's called this little village in a community, you know, like called Réalmont, where, you know, like it's just rugby league focus, you know, like there's a soccer team there, but after that, it's like very well known for this rugby league team, and because rugby league has been there for a long, long time. So my dad used to play, a lot of my family played there, you know, but I only started when I was like 10 years old, you know, and because my dad didn't want me to play when I was young, so I did soccer, I did judo, and but I couldn't wait to play the game because like a lot of weekend on a Sunday, I used to go and watch them when I was 7 or 8, and I was like, oh, I like that game, you know, and I wanted to play. And since then, yeah, just, you know, moved up the rank until, you know, like moved to Carcassonne to study and practice rugby league every day. And then I moved to Perpignan to play for Perpignan, the Tres Catalan, you know, in the first grade. And then my dream was to play in England, have a crack in Super League, which I did and achieved, and also play for France too, you know, was my dream too. So,
do you remember much about your Super League debut?
Oh, yeah, I do. John Key was the coach, and I played for Huddersfield. So that was my first team in Super League. And I was 18. The team wasn't doing really well. And after, I think, 5 rounds, John told me, like, you'll be on the bench against Bradford. Mm-hmm. And he was the mighty Bradford, you know.
Oh, right,
Paul Crozer was there, Leslie by Nicolo, Tevita by Kono, you know, and Joe Van Gana on the front row. They were, like, at their best there. And I came on the second half. We got a scrum first, and Jim Namo was half and just gave me the ball on the first occasion, you know, and I decided, probably the Henry Paul was the smaller guy on the pitch, so I just decided to run out at him, you know, and I was like, oh, wow. He still put good shoulder on me, and that's like, yeah, that's my first memory of Super League.
That's fantastic. What did it mean to you to join the ranks of French players who made it to the UK professional ranks?
You know, it's huge, you know, it's something I'm proud of, you know, because there was not that many, you know, I'm talking about, that's like 2000, you know. Mm-hmm. Honestly, we didn't have any idea of professionalism, mm-hmm. but in France, you know, I've been into that sports study where we train every day, and it was like, it was good preparation for us, but nothing like what it was in England, and the way they were preparing for the game. So we couldn't get to watch game, you know, like Super League game in France, you know, like we didn't have the internet, and it wasn't like that, you know, in 2000. So if you do your research now, you can check and learn. It was a bit harder, you know, at that time. So, and that's why, I mean, it makes it even more, like, for me, like, something that, like, it makes me proud, because it wasn't easy, you know, it wasn't easy, and leaving the family too. We were communicating by fax, you know, with my mother. That, you know, like, so it wasn't like, yeah, it wasn't easy how it can be now. So, but it's such a great achievement and honor. But also, sometimes I've got regrets, you know, like, because if I had the knowledge that I have now, if I have, like, coaches also, so then, you know, took me a little bit more under their arm, I think I could have been a lot better player. Now when we're preparing our boys, I would have loved to be, like, a sportsman now, because, you know, like, the research that there is in sports, and now in terms of preparation, in terms of, like, you know, like, get the boys ready, their body, the mind, and, you know, the mindset. It was raw, you know, it was like, if you're good naturally, you can do it, but after that, they didn't give us enough tools to get better.
Yeah. Well, I was going to ask later on, but I'll bring these questions forward now about coaching, because you've obviously been a coach for several years now. What perspective specifically does coaching give you that you just don't get as a player?
Honestly, like, it's the human side that I really enjoy. Giving the opportunity to some young man, you know, and, you know, like, having the thinking behind it of, like, a project and bringing everyone together to achieve it, you know, like, it's such a great, you know, like, feeling. That's what, as a coach, you get, you know, and it goes from, like, you know, preparation from your first day to pre-season to the end, you know, like, when you can get the reward, even, like, you know, like, we still haven't achieved what we want to do, like, you to go to Super League, but all the stages that we want to do, and every year, like, we bring new details, you know, like, we want to make them something that we're going to be good at. Mm-hmm. And when you see that through the years, you know, like for example, 2 years ago, we want to change our defense. We lost the first two games when we changed our defense that year. Mm. And so that's where, like, you know, you're in a tricky position of like, what's happened? You know, like, is it the players, you know, they're kind of going to start to doubt. You need to make sure like, that the players still believe mm-hmm. what we're going to do. You know, you're going to show them that you're going to work. You need to be good with your management and with your players. And when after, the, I think, on the fourth game, we went to Bradford and we beat them 14-0. Mm. That was the first nil that we had, like, in my coaching career, you know. Yeah. That was, like, you know, it's just great. Huge reward. And from then, you know, like, players, they reinforce, obviously, your position and things like that, you know. It's, like, it's really interesting. You know, the strategy, the tactical, you know, analyzing opposition. I really like that as a coach. You know, it's a unique position, coach. I'm so privileged to be in that position, and I will thank Toulouse forever, you know, like, to give me like that, such an honor to have represented the club into this coaching role, you know, forever.
Mm-hmm. Sylvain, is there a highlight from your time in the UK? One moment that you remember vividly, a game, a try, an atmosphere that you experienced?
And I've got probably two games, you know, that mark my memories in the UK. The similarly circumstances, if you want. The first one, it was in 2003, I think, with the London Broncos. Bradford had been crowned Super League champion in 2002 mm-hmm. and World Cup champion. And they came at London, you know, and they were like, I can't remember exactly time, but they were unbeaten. They had like a run of, I don't know how many games. Mm. And we managed to beat them 15 points to 14. Wow. You know, with, I think, yeah, I was on a wing on that day. I was in front of David Zavaikona, you know. And again, it was this huge Bulls team, you know, and we're like, having done that result for us, you know, it was unbelievable. And I remember, you know, we were leading for a while and it was like 15 minutes to go, you know, and I just remember them that they were like pinning us, you know, they were standing by corner against me all like for the last 10 minutes, you know, and I was like, I really like, wasn't the pressure I could feel because I was a youngster, you know, and obviously in the French too, youngster, so, but I just didn't want to let my teammates down and, you know, I have to like just get this leg and tackle him, whatever I have to do, I want to do it, just not to disappoint my team, my coaches, you know, and our supporters, and we managed to win, and it was just an unbelievable moment, you know, for me. And the second one is a similar one, but that was with Wakefield. And I think that's in 2005. Leeds has been same crowned Super League champion and World Cup champion in 2004. Mm. They were an unbeaten record again. And it was around the Easter period, you know, when we play on a Friday and on a Monday. And on a Friday, we play at London, and I didn't play that game. And we lost quite heavy. We lost by 50 points. And on Easter Monday, we were playing Leeds. So can you imagine, you know, we lost a little at London and we were playing Leeds where they were unbeaten and like touchable at the time. Mm. And Shane McNeely like told me like, you'll be playing in the center. And I was like, oh, wow. At Headingley, you know, in front of 20,000 people on Easter Monday, which was like, I was happy, you know, and it was huge. Mm. And we managed to beat them. Like, we beat Leeds, like, we broke their records in front of 20,000 people. And it was just magical. It was the best memory for me, you know, like, them two games.
Fantastic. Fantastic. They're great memories. Now, Sylvain, you bookended your playing career in France. I mean, you started your career there, and after several years in the UK, you returned to the Elite One. Did you notice significant changes from the time you left to the time when you returned?
As I said to you, a little bit more with the information given to the players. Mm-hmm. You know, like, you know, players were a little bit more now aware that you need to grow as a, you know, and like do some research, looking, you know, studying the game, studying the players, you know, and obviously like, Australian coach who came there too, you know, and in Toulouse, Justin Morgan was their coach, you know, and so he brought professionalism into the club, you know, like a little bit of culture and give a little bit more information and prepare the players better, you know, and obviously the fitness side too, you know, like when I started, there was no gym session at all. Like when I came back, club like started to have like fitness coaches and within like, you know, a gym session, a couple of gym sessions in a week. So that's probably like the thing that I noticed the most.
Now, Sylvain, let's go to your time in the tricolours of the French national team. You represented France, I think, 17 times?
Yes, like, that's it.
Yeah. What was the feeling like in the French camp back in your time? Was there a good camaraderie there when the UK-based players joined back up with the local French talent? Or was there a bit of rivalry there? What was that all like?
Well, I mean, first of all, it's a huge proud and honor, you know, like to represent my country. And it was something I really wanted, you know. Mm. And to answer your question, like, I have to do it again in two times, because if you want, my first memory of France was we didn't have any club in Super League, or there wasn't many players playing in England. Mm. So because I played when I was 18, so that was like in 99, I think I started. So there was only like French players, and the camaraderie was awesome. Mm. Like, I mean, you know, I was a youngster, but like how they embraced me, all players, you know, that was, it was huge, you know. And we did a tour in New Zealand, in Papua New Guinea. We went for 4 weeks there, you know, and I mean, you can imagine like the great time we had. And after that on the field, you know, we had a go, you know, we were like, it was an honor for us to represent it. And we played New Zealand, you know, at the Rixton Stadium, and we lost 30 points to nil against New Zealand, but and we knew it would be tough. I mean, we were playing guys like Ruben Wiki, you know, and we were watching play the first grade, and really, you know, Stacey John was playing, you know, so Clinton Tupi, Francis Milley on the wing, you know, I was in front of him, you know, and I, as a 18 man, you know, like, it was just such great memories, you know, and but we had players, I mean, I don't know, you can imagine the French culture, we had players who were like just cracking joke every day from the first minute they're waking up to the last one, you know, and even our staff, they were nice, you know, like they were, again, it wasn't as professional as we could be or is now, but in terms of memories, I couldn't ask for more, you know, it was such great fun.
Yeah. Now, as someone who has experienced things firsthand as a French international, what were the facets of the game where you felt the gap between the French and the top teams was the biggest? Was it tactical, physical, or was it more around the professionalism of the setup?
Well, it's everything, you know, general. You know, I think, again, I'm going back to the staff before. Like, they didn't give us the tools, enough tools for us to be competitive, you know. It was just like, for me, the memories I have, it was like just we just train, but we didn't have any game plan or any tactics how we were going to beat them, you know. Like, how my memory is I was going there in the field with knowledge of, but it was just about for me taking the ball and do as best as I can to try, you know. That's the memory that I have, and which is sad because we had players who were like, you know, like had great skills, has great talent, but again, we were not in a good environment. And that's not the staff's fault, or it was just like that before, you know, like it was, you know, like think dirigents of the game that just believe that you need to put someone with a good aura there as a coach, as a head coach, and then he'll be yelling at you at halftime if you're behind, and you're gonna bounce back, you know. I think there's more than that to winning a game. So, and I remember playing Lebanon, you know, in Lebanon, where you would think that we should be able to beat them. And El Nasri was playing, you know.
Oh, yeah,
I'm sure. Yeah, they beat us by 30 because they came. There was a lot of Australian in that team, and I think they had an Australian coach, but they came and they had like a game plan. They were like, they attacked us for defender, and they were like a little bit of counting numbers. We know we were not good counting numbers. It was like, you know, like three forwards run for like one shape and a kick, you know, like things like that, you know. So, yeah, it was different, but I thought that we could have been a lot better. And after that, the thing also, like, in terms of preparation, game preparation, like sharing the experience with the old players who have been, if you want, a little bit like, you know, that in 1991, it's the last team, French team, who beat the Lions, you know, the English team. No, I would have loved how they beat them. You know, we don't know that. You know, like, we still... Even me, I don't know how they managed to do that. You know, I would have liked to know how they managed to do this. It was just pure luck. Oh no, obviously I don't believe it now, but it was just not only like just toughness or like they are like a little bit of like obviously a shorter character, but it's more than that. And knowing all them things, creating a little bit born with legend players, you know, play that game. I think that's sharing the experience, especially when you're young. I think it's a big key, it's important that we create that.
Yeah, bringing the old boys in. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Now, just like I asked you about your time in UK Rugby League, can you tell me about a highlight from your time with the national team? Was there a game, a tournament, a moment that sticks out for you?
Yeah, there will be one moment. I played, I think, 13 times for France, and then after I had like a couple of injuries, you know, on my knees. Mm. And so I didn't play for 3 years. I wasn't selected and couldn't play for France for 3 years. Mm. Until John Money brought me back. Mm. The first game was against England, again at Headingley. And just that moment of, I thought my international career was over, you know, and I was like kind of sad, you know, like when them 3 years I was watching France playing, and as I was saying, oh, I'm not there anymore, you know. And, but John Money called and he brought me back, and honor to represent France again was just huge, you know. It was like that national anthem when I sang it, you know, he came from very far out, you know, like, and and I had a great game too. I really enjoyed playing in that game. We were like, at halftime, we were not too far off. You know, we were giving like a good shot against England, or we ended up losing after quite early, I think. It was like quite a big memories, you know, for me. Yeah. And obviously also like my family's in law was at a game. Like it was the first time they were watching me playing for France, you know. Oh, nice. They came up from London, you know. So yeah, it was just a very, very good honor for me.
That's a great achievement to come back after 3 years out of the side. Now, before we get to your best French 13, I have one more question, and it's from a guest questioner, Sylvain, who goes by the name of Big Al. And it goes something like this. Hello, Sylvain. I hope you are well. It's Big Al here. Do you remember me? It's okay if you don't. Sylvain, when this COVID thing is over, I'm seriously considering a move to Albi to become a farmer, just like you. Would you recommend this as a life move? If so, what up-and-coming crops should I consider farming?
I do remember of you. Like, I can't forget Big Al. You'll be more than welcome to come, and I think he is a great one. Honestly, like, looking at the world that he goes, you know, I'm a big believer of farming and like all the natural feeding the world like on the best way we can. And but for you, Big Al, I think, you know, you need to come down next to Albi in like the little place who's called Gaillac. Okay. To make the best wine ever, and you should go into the vineyard.
There you go. That's great advice. Now, Sylvain, it's fascinating stuff. Thanks so much for sharing these experiences and insights. Now I'd love to get on to the best French 13 of your lifetime, the best players you've seen, played with or against, or coached. Now, I'm sorry to have given you homework. You're the first guest I've ever asked to do homework, but I just thought it'd be a great education for me, and I'm sure many listeners too, because when we talk about the history of French rugby league and the best French players of all time, the 1950s and 1960s cast a long shadow. So I thought it would be interesting to learn about some of the best players from the last 40 years from your lifetime. So why don't we kick off with the fullback? Who have you got at the back and why?
Yeah, like you say, you know, it was interesting because, like you say, like on the first name of the fullback, I will pick Pipette, Puy-Goubert, you know. Yeah. But like you say, knowing that, you know, in the last 40 years, it was like a good, like you say, you give me good homework to do. But it was really interesting also to reflect on that. And for me, that the fullback, I will put Thomas Bosc, who played for the Dragons, you know. Mm-hmm. And because it's, I think you probably, I will say that a lot on why I put them players into this league. But it was because he's just such a great natural footballer. Mm. You know, he had an understanding of the game. He was like a very fully smart, you know, like he's and very skillful. He could create, could see, was someone to look up and like had the confidence to create big things. So, and I know him when he was really young, you know, and he was someone very shy, like a little bit like introverted, but looking at him through his career, growing up and how he developed and taking a little bit of leadership, being the captain at then, was also like a big issue. And that's why I think, I believe like Thomas will be his fullback.
Yeah, it's interesting you've got him at fullback because I only really knew him as in the halves. And I remember seeing a chip and chase off both feet against London Broncos. He was really a skillful player. All right, there's your fullback, Thomas Bosc. Now, who have you got on the wings?
Yeah, that was like probably the toughest position for me, you know, like looking at two best wingers, you know, like over the last 40 years. And I was like, why is he as loud? You know, I asked myself that question. And I think it's probably because I believe that the winger position has evolved so much, you know, in the last 40 years. And that's probably why, you know, because with what we're asking to wingers to do now, you know, in the last 20 or 30 years, I don't think wingers were just on a wing and trying to finish tries, you know. But now with what we're asking them, like defensively taking the right option, you know, like returning kick, you know, catching them, bringing, you know, like on their first tackle, yeah. You know, like making meters, finding their feet, like then playing fast for the teammates, and obviously after that finishing tries is so demanding. And so I'm gonna go with like two of my wingers, because I when I look at that and I say all of that, there's probably the two wingers play for France, they're so in the French team actually, but I think that they can achieve big because they've got all of them character, you know, and so it will be Ilias Bergal and Paul Marcon, my two wingers, where, you know, they've got all their attributes. And I say, you know, Paul is a great reader in defense, make good decision. He's a great finisher, and goes through a lot of work, and he's extremely fast too. And Ilias is a little bit like different than Paul, but like, because he's so such a strong boy, you know, he's like 100+ kilos winger, where on a first, like on a second tackle, it does very, like, it takes a lot of players to tackle him, and he's like very strong. And after that, his positioning is great, you know, he great well in defense, follow well his alpha center. But after that, in finishing tries, is outstanding. You know, and in his first game for us, he scored 6 tries against Rochdale, you know, where with a center who was junior bye-bye, who they only trained 1 week together. You know, it was his first game. Junior was his first game, you know, and junior is like so a player where he's that skillful in attack than to find the right timing is really hard. If they find him, like Ilias find the timing with Junior on his first game and score 6 tries, you know, so he's, there you go.
There you go, that's very interesting. So you weren't tempted to put yourself in there, so there you go, okay. Paul Marcon, he always features in the highlights. He scores some spectacular tries. I remember one against Toronto, and I think he was part of the French 9 squad as well. And Ilias Bergal, yeah, you're right. He has all the ingredients of the top-class winger, tall, strong, good finisher, yeah.
And again, he's one of them guys. He's really natural. He's a good natural footballer, you know, because he's smart. He knows how to, when to come in, you know, and he's things that sometimes you can coach, you know. He's like, he knows how to position himself well to be in the best position to score tries, you know, and that's why he's there for me.
Sure. Okay, so two very modern wingers. So, Sylvain, who have we got in the centres?
And there, I'm going to go two very old centres. I'm going to go with David Fraisse on the center and Guy Delaunay. So David played, he played in England, so he had a career with in England. And Guy was like, he was my ex-coach too, to be fair, at the 13 Catalan. But then two centers, they're similar. They were like very aggressive in everything they were doing, you know, like which was defense or attacking. They were like running very hard, you know, like they had good lines, they got great feet, and they were strong too. They were strong fellow, you know, for people who were not doing any gym session, you know, they were like really hard, but after that they were able to defend and they were a great competitor for me, you know, like so that's why. And you know, they play for France a lot, you know. Guy Delaunay, I remember seeing picture of him, you know, against Australia, and where, like, you know, he was in front of Mal Meninga and gave him very like a tough game, you know. It's not something, you know, when you play against Mal Meninga, you know, and I think I've seen somewhere that Mal Meninga was telling it, like, you know, he was recognized as one of the best center in the world, you know, Guy Delaunay. So yeah, it's something to achieve, you know. That's why the two players will be on my center's team.
Yeah, okay. So Guy Delaunay, he played for Saint-Estève and was part of the French team throughout the 80s and early 90s. And David Fraisse represented France in the 80s and 90s, including the Rugby League World Cup 1995, and also played for Sheffield, as you said, and Bradford and Workington Town. So there you go. There are your centres. Okay, so who have you got in the halves? Firstly, at standoff, 5'8".
Yes, so it would be Pierre Chamouring, come from Perpignan, where I played for Saint-Estève. But he also was part of the team in the Paris Saint-Germain Rugby League team, you know, in the Super League. I played with Pierre on my last year, and he was someone, you know, like so skillful and so smart, you know, like fully smart. It was just like unbelievable to watch. He had everything. All the passes you can have, like he had great feet, great kicking game. He could win a game just on his own for you, you know, and that's how why I put him there as the best, because he's just, again, like this vision, this naturally footy knowledge, you know, was unbelievable. And after that, having played on my list, like I've watched him play, but having played my last season with him, I just recognized how, like, even, like, you know, he wasn't someone who talked much. blew out the aura he had, like, in the changing room. He was such a great leader, and, you know, I knew that, you know, that's why he achieved so much. Mm. Won a lot of trophy with Saint-Estève, because Pierre was, like, you know, an outstanding player there. And it's a shame that, again, you know, player like him, if he had, like, a professional environment or a name, would have been such a world-class player.
And what about at halfback?
Yeah, and in the half, he'd be Patrick Antat. Mm-hmm. And there was, like, there's a few players there, because I would have cool mentioned Gilles Dumas, my old coaches, who was, like, very good half two and great leaders around the park. But I thought Patrick was, like, a little bit more the complete players, you know, like, he was a really tough guy. Goes hard in defense, put big shoulder, you know, and, like, could aggress players. Even he was so small, but he could aggress players, and I like that aspect a little bit of half sometimes, because he showed to your teammates that, you know, if your halfback is up there, you know, like, you're gonna follow him. Mm. And after again, he had, like, a great vision, kicking, pass, short pass. Like, he was very tenuous players, you know, who could create something from nothing, you know. Mm. So, under career in England too, you know. So, Patrick would be my halfback.
Fantastic. So, the halves there were both from the Rugby League World Cup 1995. And I believe Patrick, he played for Avignon and then spent some time at Hull FC, Leeds, and yes, of course, Paris Saint-Germain. Now, we've got our back line, so let's go to the forwards. Who have you got in the prop department?
Yeah, well, the first one will be Jérôme Guissé, mm-hmm. which I played many, many years with and a lot of games together. And he's someone a little bit older than me, but he's always someone who, like, inspired me. You know, it was like we went in England together, and he's someone that I was looking at, because he's not the biggest pro forward, you know, but his preparation is what was probably for me the first real professional in France, where, like, you know, because he went in England as a young man. Mm-hmm. He also played 3 games in Anorak, you know, for Canberra. Mm-hmm. So he came back there, and we were in the same sports study, you know, in Carcassonne together. So when he came back from Canberra, you know, he brought us a lot of that, and he was sharing things, you know, and he was just someone to look at, and the way he was preparing himself for the seasons, for games. I really liked it. And after that, you know, the way he played the game, he's someone who was consistent. You know, every weekend he was good, you know, and that's why I say he's probably the first professional, because he had the preparation, he had the routine, and he was delivering every weekend, week out, you know.
Mm. And the other prop forward?
Yeah, the other prop forward is, like, an old teammate, my old captain, and he's unfortunately, and he passed away last year, you know, but he was Didier Cabestany. Mm-hmm. And for different reasons, because he wasn't professional at all, like, mm-hmm. in terms of he was just raw as, but, like, what a great player, mm-hmm. you know, like, and tough as a nail, you know, he was, like, just someone who could. You knew why he was your captain, because he just showed his way all the time. He had, like, a big engine on him, just taking carries after carries, tackling after tackling. He was, like, this big mountain guy, you know, with huge hand and, like, you know, as raw and natural as he could be. He wasn't the most skillful prop, but just go hard every game, every time for a long period, like, you know, as long as he was on the field and in training. You know, and as a captain, he wasn't saying much in the changing room, but he was just showing the way on the field. And you know, he was my captain when I was 17, but I knew he would protect me. You know, like, he was like, just, he wasn't saying much, but he was only one thing. He was like, guys, you know, if someone touched Sylvain, you know, like, we're all there, you know. So, you know, like, it was, like, kind of reassuring at that time. So it was just such a great player, you know, to have around.
Big brother figure. Now, he played most of his career at Tres Catalan before featuring in PSG's 2 Super League seasons. Okay, there you're prop forwards. What about the hooker?
Yeah, the hooker, I'm going to put Julien Rinaldi. So, mm-hmm. again, he's like a former half, you know, who finished his career in hooker. But I think he's probably the best hooker than French produced, you know. Again, same than Jerome. I really like his professionalism. You know, he started at Villeneuve as a youngster, play a lot of games there and win a lot of trophy, you know, and then moved to the Catalan, player in England, I think, for Bradford, Wakefield, finished in London, you know. And towards the end, you know, when I played last game for France with him, I really liked the way he aborted the games. Like, you know, he was like his preparation. He was a great professionalism. And in terms of the hooker role, having played half, really made him very skillful. Mm-hmm. Like his passing, his kicking, his vision made him like a really great hooker, you know. And after that, his competitiveness made him like a very good defender. He was like, because he wasn't the biggest player, but like in the middle, like he was just tackling everything, you know, like having like a great technique there, and just work really hard to achieve all them things, you know. And I think Julien, like, yeah, someone that I was looking up to, you know, because I really like the way this competitiveness and the way he approached the game.
Yeah, and Julien was also part of the 2008 Rugby League World Cup campaign. And as you said, after starting out at Villeneuve, he spent time at about 6 Super League clubs, or UK clubs, I believe, and, you know, a very energetic player. Okay, there's your front row. Who have we got in the second row, number 11 and 12? Who have we got?
So the number 11 will be Gaël Talec, which left France as a, like, as a 17-year boy, you know, because he was signed by Wigan.
Yeah.
And play for Wigan and Castleford in Halifax, maybe, I think, in Super League.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, I know Gaël very well and play with him. And he's such a great teammate. He was someone who took me under his wing too. But like, for example, on that tour in New Zealand, I was rooming him with him, you know. And he's a lot older than me, but just teach me a few things, you know, how approaching and learning the game. And that's why I really rate him for that. Like, as maybe as a little bit of selfish reason, but on the field, having achieved what he's done, he's probably the first French players who like made a big career, you know, in England, in Super League, and playing regularly there. He was strong, he had great feet, he was like, you know, like he had a good size, but like, again, he has to work hard to achieve what he wants to do. And he was someone like worked really, really hard, but his way of approaching the game and his line was really good, you know. He ran a really good line as a second row, so that's why he's there. And my second row will be Pascal Jampi from the 13 Catalan.
Mm-hmm.
Someone who I played many years with, and like off the field was like a great character, always done. I got a smile on his face, and that's as important as being on the field for me. Yeah. You know, like he was someone who never negative, never. You know, like, he always shake his hand in the morning, or like we were training on the evening there, but every day he had like a great smile on his face and asking you how you are, you know. And after that on the field, he's someone who loved the ball, running with the ball, could go across the field because he was really fast for his side. He had a huge bend and like just bump players from after bumping players, you know, like a lot of breaking tackles. And it was like a walker, could he walk a lot on the field for the team. So that's why they might two single row.
Yes, and both those second rowers, Talec and Jumpy, were part of the 1995 Rugby League World Cup campaign. I think Jumpy was also part of 2000 Rugby League World Cup as well. And he spent his whole career in France, played for, as you said, 13 Catalan, then PSG in Super League, and then the merged UTC club in Perpignan as well. Now, who is locking the scrum?
Yeah, I'm going to go for Rémi Casti, who, like, so I'll use a little bit of front row lock, you know, there, because I believe, you know, he has to be on that team with all the achievement that he's done with the Catalan, obviously, too. You know, he's was another one who played, like, in NRL, and there's not that many French players who play in NRL. There's only 3, so, you know, like, and Rémi was there, you know, and such a good team, too, at the Roosters, you know, so that, which is a huge achievement there. You know, you have to know that Rémi wasn't the most gifted players when he was young. If you have seen him when he was 15 years old, you would have never said that he will achieve what he's done. But along, you know, his journey, he's like meeting very good coaches, I think, you know, along his way, you know, and which one of them will be like Trent Robinson from the Roosters, and also the fitness coach, Keegan Smith, you know, who really, really helped him to look after himself, to prepare himself, and because of his willingness and resilience, you know, like of Rémi, just so who wants to achieve and be such a good player. And, you know, like he managed to build himself like an athleticism and a way of playing the game that suited him. Because, again, he's not the biggest pro forward, and to play at this level, and I think he achieved 250 games. No, I think he had like a huge number, and being consistent week in, week out, that he wanted to room for him on his team, because I think he will go down as like a one of our legend of the game. You know?
Yeah, a real stalwart of the Catalan Dragons, has been there from the beginning. But of course, yeah, like you said, spent the 2014 season playing for the Roosters. Okay, so that is a pretty formidable team. Thank you so much for sharing. Let's go through it. I'm just going to recap again. So we've got at fullback Tomah Bosque, On the wings, we've got Paul Marcon and Ilias Bergel. In the centres, Guy Delaney and David Fraisse. I'm sure I've mangled that pronunciation. In the halves, we've got Pierre Chamorin and Patrick Entat. In the front row, we've got Jérôme Gousset and Didier Cabestany. And at hooker, Julien Rinaldi. And in the second row, Gael Talek and Pascal Jompy. And locking the scrum, Rémi Casti, of course. So very, very interesting. So thank you so much for sharing that team with us, Sylvain. Are you happy with that team?
Yeah, I am, actually. I think there's some very good players, you know, and I even like it even more with your pronunciation. So it's perfect.
Yeah, apologies to all the families out there.
No, it's perfect. No, you did it well.
All right, well, Sylvain, we're out of time, but thanks so much for taking the time to join us and sharing your thoughts and experiences from your life in French Rugby League. Can't wait to see Toulouse Olympique back in action very soon. So, Sylvain Houllet, go well, and thank you so much for joining the Progressive Rugby League podcast.
Thank you very much to you. You know, say hello to all our Australian families and followers, you know, and we really look forward to, you know, to get back, obviously, into action with Toulouse.
Progressive Rugby League.
Fantastic stuff. Yeah, it was just over a year ago when we visited Sylvain's farm. Sylvain picked a few plums from his plum tree to keep us sated on our drive back from his farm to Toulouse. I was going to say it feels like only yesterday, but it actually feels a bit more like 5 years ago. Damn, this VAR is playing with my perception of time. All right, time to call it for another day. If you want to check out our experiences from that trip last year, look out for PRL Study Tour audio scrapbook in our feed from about August last year. But otherwise, thanks again for your time, ladies and gentlemen, and until we next meet, Rugby League Hobby, and see ya!